Sportsnet 590. The Fan.
The righties 1-2. Vladdy unleashes a ball to left center field. Going back, Capel. It's gone! His first homer at Rogers Center this season, and the Blue Jays have a 4-3 lead. Rogers Center on its feet. They have been waiting months for Vladdy to hit a ball like that. 434 feet.
Belt is going, and so is Guerrero. Out to deep center field. That's a no doubt. Holy smokes, Vladimir. He waited 31 games here at Rogers Center to get his first of the season, and now he's homered in consecutive home games here in Toronto.
Ben Wagner's Vladimir is, that's the A Vladimir. There's no better Vladimir than Ben Wagner saying Vladimir. It's the Fan Morning Show back on the air. Sportsnet 590, the Fan, Justin Cuthbert and Brent Gunning this morning. What's going on, Brent?
Lots of me is what's going on. I hope you like me. One guy on the text line does not. It's going to be a rough summer for him, but lots of me going on here. Happy to be on with you. I enjoyed my little dalliance with Ailish on Friday. I know we're going to track her down. She's posting Instagram stuff from Tootsie's in Nashville way too early, way too late. I don't know which way that goes, but I hope she's having a time doing great work for her social team.
One thing about Ayla, she will acclimatize herself very smoothly. So I'm sure she's already, you know, breaking bread with Sportsnet folks and she was, enjoying.
She was talking to me about getting a hat when she was there.
Oh, yeah. That's another thing that I actually didn't know until we started working together. If she is in any merch tent, if she's at an event, it's almost like if she doesn't scratch that itch, buying something, a souvenir, something in her hands, she will not be able to control herself. Like she needs to get it done so she can just focus on other things. So I'm sure she's bought a lot of stuff already. Before we get to the Blue Jays, because it's a big weekend, I got to get something off my chest.
Ooh.
I love Grady Dick. I am so, so disappointed that I didn't get to come on the show on Friday. And I feel like I missed the Grady Dick jokes. Like, I feel like the statute of limitations, maybe it's passed by. I'm not sure I can involve myself as much as you guys, I'm sure, did on Friday. But it doesn't even matter. We don't even need the jokes because I love this guy. And I think he has such an opportunity to absolutely take advantage of this market more than anyone ever has. Remember when we were trying to convince ourselves that Kawhi Leonard was funny?
Yes.
And we're like, and I've worked on like the micro level in terms of like covering a specific team in this market. Mm-hmm. And all you're doing when you're doing that, especially when you're sharing things on social media, is trying to find the single thing that it might be humorous about, say, Zach Hyman one day. Like that, you were dying for just a moment of levity from someone because that's what people eat up most. Mm-hmm. This guy is offering that for free all the time.
There's a lot of levity. I will maintain. Kawhi Leonard is hilarious. Norm Powell trying to dap him up and him just pointing to the floor. The bleep it, let's win both that we never got to hear, but we did. I do maintain Kawhi Leonard is hilarious, but I completely understand what you're saying. The one bit of pushback, and I don't want to get there yet, but it's going to happen.
I'm a fun guy.
See? He's hilarious. And he was fun. And guess what? That was funny, okay? Some people,
that was funny.
Deadpan
that was
humor,
funny.
It works, okay? He's got it. In terms of Grady Dick, this is all great, and I think it's going to be all gravy, and I really am bullish on the person, the player, all of that stuff. How do we feel? And I think there's a lot of other people to get angry at in this organization, in this fair, or in, on that team when this inevitably happens.
Mm-hmm.
When the Raptors hit their 1-6 slide at some point, and he's, you know, I'm going to sound 100
years old. No, don't go there.
He's like,
jumping the gun here.
He's Fortnite dancing on this side.
No,
and him and Scotty Barnes are throwing each other oops down 30. I think we're going to feel, maybe, I just think it's fair to say, 1% different about it. But let's not go there. Let's just talk about the fun times now, because I'm with you. I saw the videos, everything from draft night, all the stuff, his suit. He's at the Jays game. He's taking pictures with people outside of Scotiabank.
Mm-hmm.
It's awesome. It is nothing but feel good. I just hope we can, and I say this knowing I won't be able to, I hope we can remember how much fun we're having with this when inevitably he goes 1-for-8 from three and the Raptors lose a heartbreaker.
Okay, all right.
Sorry, look, it's the truth.
My concern predominantly, at least from like the social aspect, would be just like Raptors social. Yep. Probably very talented people.
I would imagine.
But just don't go crazy with it. Just slow play it.
Well, it's already organic, right?
Yes. Just it doesn't have to be 13,000 content plays right off the bat. He's going to give it to you naturally. He's a fun guy, legitimately. He wants the stage. Legitimately, he wants the attention that Kawhi Leonard did not want himself. Just play it slow because it'll work out organically and be very, very entertaining. But I could see a world where everyone just wants a piece. I have to say his first name because I just like it doesn't.
Well, I think
a piece of Grady. Everyone wants a piece of Grady. We just don't want to fumble this opportunity because it is a good one.
Any Richard in the greater Toronto area, Canada basketball fan, that is on the Christmas list. At the very least, Grady Dick jersey.
Looks like he's going with the number one as well.
Wow.
Dick one.
That's great. We all know what the one that would have caused the most consternation is. I think one might be the second funniest number, actually, now that I think about it. I think that would be the second funniest
one.
And I do feel sorry for you that you missed it because I've been there. I have booked myself on this very morning show because I wanted to talk about something. So I've been there itching to talk about it. So I'm happy that we allowed you this runway to share your love of Grady.
Yeah, just a reminder, don't take a day off, especially when Grady Dick is wearing a suit that he was wearing and he worked out for the Toronto Raptors and there was a possibility that it may happen. Okay, let's move on to the Blue Jays because it was... Actually, I don't even want to describe it. I want to allow you a chance to maybe put a grade or a sign.
I'm just going
to
give you a word.
Okay, give me a word.
Cathartic.
Was it?
Yeah.
I needed that yesterday. Because I'm still thinking about Friday a little bit.
Elaine, intern Al, back there, he's shaking his head. He does not like me going with cathartic. You needed that. And it's about one guy and one guy only. Okay? Friday stunk. Okay? We can begrudge it.
But it was, you saw the thing you needed to see.
And with Vladdy, goes 500 over the weekend. A couple of bombs. We talk about this all the time with goal scorers in hockey. We talk about this all the time with shooters in basketball. We talk about this with power hitters in baseball. You just need to see one go in or you need to see one get out. And you hope that this can spurn him on. The thing with Vladdy that we have talked about all year long, crushing the ball at the wrong places and then chasing balls out of the zone. He was not doing that this weekend. And you really just hope that a guy who is as talented as he is, because we all can get down on him in the approach at times, but let's not forget what he is. A guy who is as talented as he is, for him to have that little boost, you can believe that it's something that can light the spark. It doesn't mean it's going to for sure, but for a team that needs to get going in a big, big way, that is the biggest, or that's the simplest recipe for it, is Vladimir Guerrero Jr. to go on an incredible heater. And him having that weekend matters more than anything else could have happened. Even if he would have had that exact same weekend and yesterday didn't happen of the big blowout, I still think it's a cathartic weekend because so much of this season and so much of this fan base hope still rest on that guy, especially with everything going on with Manoah.
Yeah, that's a good point, because if you went 3-0 and you scratched out all three victories and you had good starting pitching, maybe it wasn't great, but you just got the job done because you were better than, frankly, a minor league ball team. Mm-hmm. It would have been fine. I mean, we'd be happy to get three victories for sure, but maybe you would prefer the breakout in two wins compared to three just because the breakout is so meaningful. It was kind of a sour note in your mouth, though, watching Friday, because the theory of you only need Vlad to be Vlad, that's the only thing this team needs. Well, it was proven untrue because Chris Bassett struggled and Jordan Romano, who was kind of trending toward a moment like that, I felt at least. Like, it was a big Romano love fest weekend, leading in saves now, but he was kind of trending towards giving one up and did give one up on Friday night, which is, something that, I feel like the Romano spin might be a little bit too heavy at times, but it was about Vlad. It was about the Vlad three-run home run and disappointment that, hey, you finally got that moment, but you lost the game. Maybe this team can't get out of its own way. But you answer that loss with two really convincing victories, great pitching performances from Jose Berríos and Yusei Kikuchi. Mm-hmm. And for that reason, it was undoubtedly a good weekend. But my question off the top was like, how good? How good can it be when we're talking about, well, you got to do this against the Oakland A's. And even with Vlad breaking out,
yep,
you didn't get the win Friday night. But now that you can take the long view, see the 3 days mm-hmm. in its entirety, see the strides made by Vladdy, see Jose Berríos and Yusei Kikuchi continue, even though it was against a lesser team, mm-hmm. to put quality innings out there. This is as good of a Monday as I think it's been, because there have been some times of being, well, there was a time actually where they only won on weekends, yes, and they lost every weekday, which was really weird. But there have been some Mondays where it'd be like really, really tough to talk about the Blue Jays right away because there was so much bad or way more mm-hmm. bad than good. But Vladdy breaking out and the pitching performances we saw on Saturday and Sunday, you can't help but feel really, really good about this team and where what they can do against a softer portion of the schedule here coming up.
Yeah, and hey, I obviously, you know, they take two or three. They have the big blowout win. Vladdy does what he does. Berríos does what he does. Those are all good things. Now, everything I said about Vladdy and being the catalyst is true, but they can't afford. Now, I'm going to talk out of both sides of my mouth here. The Chris Bassett start, I do not want to paper over how important it is that those don't continue to happen. You do not have wiggle room in this rotation. Okay, Yusei Kikuchi was another good start for him. I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, if he is anything other than your fourth or fifth starter heading into the playoffs, you do not feel good about your playoff rotation. Is that a fair way to state it?
So if he's scheduled to start one of your wild card games, you're in trouble.
I think so.
Yeah, I would say so.
Okay, so then.
And I'm pretty bullish on Yusei.
Okay, and agreed. I think he is a great fourth option for this team right now. The problem with that is Alek Manoah is MIA until proven otherwise, and I understand he's trending in the right direction. We love all that. I also think we all need to see it before we believe any of it, given how this season is gone. Jose Berríos, I think I'm at a point where I'm buying now. You've seen consistently good mm-hmm. results, pretty much start in and start out. He has had the odd blip here or there, but he has also maintained the ability to have the truly great outings he had last year while raising his floor from what you've seen. So you feel really good about that. Even if that is your two, I think you can feel good about that. The problem is that then Bassett has to be your three. Mm-hmm. And you have just seen a few starts lately started out dazzling. He had the complete game that never happened because it happened against the Leaf playoff game. And kind of since then, it's been slowly declining down. And I think that this is the version of Chris Bassett I was concerned about when they made the acquisition of him at free agency. We knew he was an artist. He's somebody who can pitch his way out of problems. And he's really a painter out there and all of that. But when you're just a little off, when things aren't perfect with a guy like that, you see what it can look like, even against a team like the A's. So I'm bullish on what you saw out of Vladdy. I will double down that is the single most important thing for this team, not for this year, but for this team, for this competitive cycle. That is still the most important thing. But if Bassett's going to struggle the way he does, then Manoah absolutely has to come mm-hmm. back and not be fine, be a force. And again, I don't see how we can bank on that.
Yeah, to your point, kind of spinning it forward and where Yusei Kikuchi can help this team, I think you're right in that he is the truest outcome pitcher on this team. Maybe Kevin Gausman, I guess, but it's just, he's kind of like separate. Like, he's
yeah, elite. We don't talk about him because he's great.
Yeah. So, and I think he's the truest outcome pitcher on this team because, like, if you put him against an A's lineup for which he can dominate, he will. If you put him against a really talented Rays lineup, it might be a bit of a struggle. Mm-hmm. And who are you going to play in the playoffs? Well, a good lineup.
Yep.
And for that reason, the true outcome might be a negative one. However, when a guy like, I find it less frustrating to watch Yusei Kikuchi because you know in a start against Oakland, you're going to see something good.
Mm-hmm.
But against Bassett, you know, one thing's a little off. If he's 95% that day, I guess 95 you probably take. If he's less than what you need him to yep. be, he can look terrible against any lineup.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that might be the scary thing. I mean, his ceiling is probably such where you would put him in that position because, of course, mm-hmm. we've seen what he can do. Complete game against the Atlanta Braves. Like, when he's on, he can go against anyone and dominate and shut down anyone. I don't think the same can be said for Yusei Kikuchi. But if we're talking about, like, who we feel better against on a random start against the Oakland A's in late June, I'd almost go Kikuchi because when he's in that spot, when he's in a position to overwhelm a lineup mm-hmm. that he's better than, we generally see that. With Bassett, it's more of a guessing game. And that is a scary thing, frankly, in any playoff series, if and when we get there. And maybe it doesn't even come down to that because you got Gausman, Berríos, maybe you have Manoah, maybe Kikuchi plays himself in a position where it's undeniable. I'm not really sure. But when it comes to those three, Bassett, Berríos, and Kikuchi, it seems like we are getting sort of one clunker,
mm-hmm.
one stellar performance, and one good chance to win,
yeah.
which is kind of what you want from the back end of your rotation.
Mm-hmm.
Like, everything's self-serving,
right? The only pushback I would have on that is I think that's what you want for your four or five. Your three.
That's the problem.
Right.
It's like that you include Bassett in
yes.
there. Like, let's say it's one stellar, one clunker from 4-5.
Yeah.
Or two chances to win 4-5.
Sign up for that
every single time. Yep. Every single time. But when you include Bassett in the glass half empty,
mm-hmm.
if you're looking at yep. it that way, it's a little bit more problematic because you're dragging someone into that
mm-hmm.
who is very, very important. And you're leaning on a guy like Yusei Kikuchi to prop him up on a weekend against the Oakland A's where he struggles and everybody else from a pitching standpoint gets it done.
Kikuchi feels to me like this is very much an NHL or an NFL thing. We see it in a lot of sports as well. Kikuchi is the good, bad team. Kikuchi against a bad team will generally, or a bad offense, I should say, will generally speaking, take care of his business.
Mm-hmm.
But the second you throw him up against, you know, we see this all the time where a team who is 7-2 with a paper schedule in the NFL, and then they play the Chiefs and they hang in there for a half and then eventually end up getting smoked. That's kind of what happens with Kikuchi. Now, there are outliers in that, and obviously it's a little different, but that's the way I look at him. And then again, I continue to extrapolate this out for the rest of the season and just doing the math. Okay. I am confident. I wouldn't love it. If I'm building a team that I think can win a World Series, I want Jose Berríos as my three, not my two. But he can be the two on this team. Kevin Gausman is obviously an ace. He is one of the premier pitchers in baseball.
Mm-hmm.
Bassett, I cannot trust. I'm not saying you cannot get a good result out of him in a playoff game, but you cannot go in there expecting to get it. Now, the pushback to that, I'm sure, from people in the organization is obviously Manoah is this wild card. Again, can't bank on him until you see it. The thing about extrapolating this for a wild card game or thinking about it is Kikuchi does feel like kind of a perfect guy to throw out there, see what you've got, and then Bassett feels very different coming off of that. But then we're getting into the idea of basically a bullpen game, you know, in a do or die wildcard game. And it just goes to show the way this team is built. There's still flaws in it. And it all goes back to, you know, it's just,
well, it all goes back to Manoah.
That's what it is, when you build a team, you can afford to lose a seven hitter or a six hitter and find a way to make it work. We saw this team in the past where you don't have a fifth starter and they've finagled bullpen days and it's been okay. But when you take a piece from the, you know, I know this isn't how Jenga works, but the top of the Jenga pile, it all comes crashing down. And that's exactly what you saw with Manoah. And that's why it does feel like, I don't know, maybe this is way too strong of a take, but short of Alek Manoah coming back and being Alek Manoah, I don't see how this team is a playoff team, let alone winning a wild card series.
Well, I can see them winning. I can see them getting to the playoffs in an extended format, six teams. I mean, the production they're getting from the...
What if there's an injury?
Again.
Which there will be.
And for whatever reason, they didn't even safeguard themselves from a single injury. Like, they mm-hmm. are a four-man rotation right now, and they are asking a lot from their number four,
remember
their number
Mitch
five,
White.
Their number
remember
three.
Remember that.
Yeah, that's not the finest moment for this front office.
Okay.
Trading for Mitch White and expecting Mitch White to fill the role that clearly they still need to be filled as we speak. I mean, we're going to be talking this week about Canada Day and the potential for, you know, a bullpen day. And like, it's anyway, we'll get to all that.
Every time this stuff comes up about who's playing on a holiday, I will never forget.
I'm Vladdy. Asking Shai Davidi at 7 a.m.
I will never forget Vlad not playing on, I think it was Victoria
yeah.
Day. And then somebody from like the team had kind of filtered out of, look, Charlie Montoya doesn't know about Queen Victoria. And it's like, it is not about the queen. It's about the 50,000 people sitting there who want
yes.
to see Vladdy.
Yes.
But yes, that'll never not be funny. I don't know what's funnier, that them trying to pass off he didn't know about the queen, or my personal favorite line of, we turned 5 years of team control into 42 or whatever it was from Atkins.
He didn't know about the queen.
It's pretty good.
It is.
Maybe they got to go full old OHL barn and just get a portrait. Up, I guess we don't want a portrait of that guy. No.
Yeah, I think we moved on, and we're going to move on as well. But yeah, it does go back to Manoah, because if you have Manoah Gosman or Gosman Manoah, which is probably what it should have been.
Yes.
1-2, you have a chance to win a series or win a wild card round.
You have a chance
before
to
you even have to go to your third option. But with Manoah, and you get to the third option, well, you have three options. You would have had Bassett, Berríos, and Kikuchi based on who is pitching the best or who had the better season, matchup, whatever. You had endless opportunities, at least it seems. But without Manoah, you're forced to already pitch one of those guys in a playoff series. And I know we're getting ahead of ourselves here, but also go to a second one of that group. And you pillage your depth a little bit, too, because you might be asking for Kikuchi in a second game to fill in, and then you're left with what you're left with. So, again, getting ahead of ourselves, but the Manoah thing does affect everything, but thankfully not affecting Yusei Kikuchi's performance on the mound. Two hits over seven innings yesterday with eight Ks. His last six starts, according to Chris Black, shared this on Twitter yesterday, 2.48 ERA, under one whip, 0.98, 37-11 strikeout to walk ratio, and 10.2 Ks per nine innings. He's been very, very good of late. He's been very good since Manoah went down. And I think one of the things watching Kikuchi yesterday was like, is it time for the shackles to be taken off just a little bit? And he's telling Schneider on his way back after six innings, I want one more. Yeah. And I get that. It's his longest start in almost 2 years, longest start with the Blue Jays. He does have to ask for it. But I wonder, with the issues we've seen in the bullpen, with the starting rotation being what it is and being kind of flimsy and tenuous at times when, like, you run into issues, when you're not having an issue with Yusei Kikuchi anymore, which we've gotten to that point. Like, he's done a clean five innings, but he's done after five, even when the pitch count isn't crazy. And I get all these decisions are made because of past performance and his own personal metrics
time
in terms of performance.
The order and all
times
that.
Through the order. But Yusei Kikuchi seems like, on good days at least, has more to offer more times than not. And I was really glad that they let him go back out there, because if you're asking for it as a pitcher, it means you're feeling it. It's not because you want to prove something or it's you want to get one back. He was going through that game in a way where it was like, yes, confidence is oozing out of his pores. Let him go a little bit more. I think we need to take the shackles off him just a little bit. I think it's situational, but it seemed like he had like a really fixed ceiling in terms of what they allowed him to do. Mm-hmm. And I think part of that was last season and not wanting to get yourself in trouble. And I understand that they have quality arms in the bullpen, but I would like to see, and we did see it yesterday, the shackles taken off Kikuchi just a little bit, especially on days where he's going, because I think he's earned that right to pitch deeper into games when he's on, just like any other pitcher would.
Yeah, I think the bullpen is just as much a part of that as what you're getting out of Kikuchi. The other part of it as well is I think that, you know, we see this all the time in sports, right? Of, you know, hockey is the worst for this or the best, depending on how you view it, of guys feel like they have to play hurt. Rich Peverly was dead and tried to come back to the game because that's what you're supposed to do as a hockey player. I'm not taking anything away from him. That's what he wanted to do. That's how he is wired. But he's wired that way because he's a hockey player. And I think a lot of times athletes feel, especially pitchers, like they got to be demonstrative. They have to want the ball or it looks bad on them. We have enough of a track record with Kikuchi that he's not that guy. Now, it would have been tough for him to demand the ball the way it's gone up until this point. But we've seen him. This is not a guy who is overly demanding when it's not going his way. I think you want to read off confidence. You want to allow guys to show it. And it all goes back to what we were just saying at the beginning of this conversation about him, is that it's the Oakland A's, okay? If he can't get it done against that group, then he ain't going to get it done anywhere. So you might as well start putting your toe in the water. We talk about this all the time with Leafs goaltending of, hey, guys are going to have to play multiple games in a row. Maybe let them do that. And with Kikuchi, especially with the way the bullpen is, especially if you want to save the pen and don't want to tax it all year long, you're going to have to push him a little more. I do think it's situational. I don't think you plan to run him out there for seven every time. I mean, no pitcher does that anymore. You're certainly not going to do it with him. But I'm with you. I think there's a world where, and you saw it yesterday, where you can start to let him dip his toes a little deeper into the pool.
Three guests in two different Blue Jays blocks for us this morning. As I mentioned, Shai Davidi's coming on at 7 a.m., 7:05, if we're being exact. We'll talk about yesterday
and the
weekend.
Drove a hard bargain with Daniele.
Yeah, good negotiation, and everyone's happy. I mean, we should see more and more. Hopefully, we see that with the Toronto Maple Leafs, because they've got a lot to do.
Beat me to it.
This summer. And at 8:30, we're going to have Sho Ali and Ben Shulman in studio. They are hosting Blue Jays Talk or Jays Talk Plus, excuse me,
Jays Talk
at 10 a.m. in for Blake Murphy this morning. One more note on the Blue Jays. George Springer, leadoff home run. Second most leadoff home runs in MLB history now, overtaking Alfonso Soriano, still behind Ricky Henderson. A lot of connections to the Blue Jays in terms of leadoff pop.
Yeah, certainly. Look, this is the guy that you were buying when you went out and got him in free agency. A big, big part of it was the culture setter in the room and a guy who had won and an adult and all that. And I think that that is what they've got in him. But this is what you need out of George Springer, especially now that he has been shifted to right field. And not to say he's not a good defender. We saw him make a great catch in, I think it was Thursday or Friday's ball game, made another one this weekend. But clearly you're getting slightly diminishing returns there. You have seen a really unhealthy version of George Springer, both at the tail or in the middle of last season and towards the end, and a very unhealthy version just in terms of that illness that he was dealing with. That's the guy you need him to be. And having a leadoff man that can provide a little pop of his own. Obviously, any team will take the homer. You know, we're not going to get in here in the idea of homers or rally killers or anything like that. But with the fact that the Jays haven't had the pop behind him, that, you know, you're looking at a leadoff man who could just drive himself in, that's nothing to sneeze at given the Jays' kind of offensive struggles as well. So I think it's really important to see him kind of find his form as well.
Yeah, the strategy has worked out pretty well. I mean, you mentioned there were some injury issues. The illness, I think, was the strongest determining factor in terms of his slight absence and, you know, maybe a downturn in performance based on something that he's dealing with internally. But it seems like he's gotten through that. And now he can put his best foot forward like you'd like to see. And you're hoping for Vladimir Guerrero Jr. You can see Springer also have a really, really strong second half to the season. It seems like those two guys are connected a little bit, at least emotionally, maybe spiritually. It seems like when they're going, when they're on, they are happy for each other clearly. Yep. But when they're going at the same time, it's like it's more powerful than the sum of the parts. Mm-hmm. And maybe that makes sense because one's batting leadoff and one of them cleans up or one of them's hitting third, depending on the situation. But yeah, when those two guys are going, it's Bo happens in a silo, right? Mm-hmm. Those guys may be a little bit more connected into each other in terms of production. I know that's overly simplistic, but when they're both on, it means something to the Blue Jays. Naturally, Springer was asked about, you know, becoming second all time in leadoff home runs. We have actually Schneider commenting on that. Now, Josh, if you want to play that one. Josh, we got you.
It's a hell of an accomplishment for him. You know, that's a pretty cool stat. You know, what does he have, like 25 or 30 to go to catch Ricky? You know, he's got to play for a while, I think. But, it jump starts the offense. You know, guys know that, you know, he's capable of leaving the yard like that. It's cool that he's been able to do that for that long and that, you know, leadoff spot is tough. You know, he's not the prototypical leadoff guy. I don't know if there is one in today's game, really, but it's a really cool feat and definitely got us going today.
Yeah, not catching Ricky Henderson, I don't think. 81 leadoff home runs, the most in MLB history. George Springer with 55 now, overtaking Alfonso Soriano for 54. So good vibes for the Blue Jays, and that certainly helps when you can add a little personal accomplishment, a notch on the belt. Big NHL weekend.
What a player Alfonso Soriano was. You know, this is like guy you remember,
beautiful
of course,
swing.
But yeah, just
long
very
swing.
Graceful, elegant, and yeah, just pulling up his numbers now. 412 career homers there for him. So yeah, not a slouch of an accomplishment at all. And this is that I just had to do that because I feel like this is a tweet out there somewhere of just, there's nothing better than just remembering some dudes. And I
love
him.
Remembering dudes.
We love to remember, love remember dude. Dudes. So yeah, he popped up in my mind, had to give my 15 seconds on him.
Great there. Swing. My best swing, because we're remembering dudes. Favorite swing ever, BJ Upton. Beautiful, beautiful swing.
Mine, Gary Sheffield. Violent, violent. The hands going at the top right into it. There, like Griffey's was the prettiest.
Yeah.
Sheffield's. Most violent.
Sheffield, yeah. It's like if he didn't have two scoops of pre-workout before every at bat, I don't believe him.
He just like puts it in his eyes or something. Yeah. It's right to the bloodstream, baby.
Okay, so busy weekend in the NHL. I mean, maybe more talk than actual things happening, but that's what
scuttlebutt.
You want. I mean, we got the NHL awards tonight. Ailish Forfar will be there. We got the NHL draft a couple days later, Wednesday. So big weekend or big week in Nashville. A lot of happenings, and this is where you get a lot of this is the most important time in the NHL for many people's favorite thing in sports, which is transactions. So we are waiting in bated breath for a lot of stuff that was rumored over the weekend. We'll talk about some of those things now. We'll talk about it as well with Frank Saravalli at 8 a.m. this morning. In terms of NHL chatter, though, what piqued your interest the most?
I think the Flyers is obviously the most interesting one because, I don't know, maybe you feel differently about it. Getting off Kevin Hayes' money, if they should be able to do that, obviously that's going to be good. But generally speaking, when you try to warp speed things quickly, doesn't work out all that well for you. You know, I know Danny Briere is a legend there. We've seen GMs learning on the job here. There are usually hurdles to be had there. So the Flyers, I think, are honestly the most interesting team to me. I mean, we know with Torts, this is not some long rebuild. You don't get him there to do that. But they're the most fascinating team to me because you can see it work out. You can see the moves they're making and kind of understand where they're trying to turn things around. But I can also see this blowing up in their face in a big way.
Yeah, I'm actually, like, I'm kind of encouraged if I'm a Flyers fan because they've been, like, not allowed to rebuild.
Yep.
Right? They've been not allowed to tear down. And when you're a new GM, especially in Danny Briere's position, like, it really helps you to do the easy stuff first. Mm-hmm. And the easy stuff in the NHL, despite the challenges of, like, dumping money, it is still tearing down.
Yes.
There might only be a couple teams that are interested in Kevin Hayes and maybe fewer that can actually make it happen. Mm-hmm. But when you're selling off parts, it's easier than putting the finishing touches on a roster.
Sure.
So if you're a Flyers fan, you got to be encouraged by the fact that they're not holding their nose and trying to be good again, just under a different GM, but also that they're gaining some traction in selling off some of their parts. And Kevin Hayes, still a good player. Travis Sanheim, still a good player. If they get these deals done or if they're able to trade some assets, it's going to help them. It's just going to make, you know, the painful process of tearing down and building back up longer than it needs to be if you're actually trading things that have some quality on your roster. They did fail to complete both the deals they were rumored to get done, though, which is a bit concerning.
Yep.
So they might not be able to actually complete these deals. And again, there only can be so many suitors for these players, given the cap situation league-wide.
Especially Tony D'Angelo.
Especially Tony D'Angelo. I mean, the Carolina, like, actually, like, laundering players? Like, that's kind of what it felt like when that came out because, you know, they traded him for a decent return, and then they were going to take him back for 50% cost. Yeah. I mean, that is good dealing if you're Carolina, even if you're holding your nose just to have a guy like Tony D'Angelo on your roster. But the biggest move of actual consequence was the Avalanche taking a flyer on Ryan Johansson from the Nashville Predators. They can cut his $8 million, I believe, salary in half to squeeze him into their second line center position. He'll play for Gabriel Landeskog, who's going to miss, I think, the entire year with the knee injury, I believe it is, that he's dealing with. So it's an interesting move, right? Because Colorado kind of batting like Louis Sirois more than 400, though. Like they were getting the most from their plate appearances. We'll just put it that way for a long time here with not really missing, making really good decisions. I'm not so sure about this one. I mean, Ryan Johansson has been to a Stanley Cup final. He's played important roles for good teams.
Feels like a mirage, I have to be honest.
But it does, it does feel like a little bit of a mirage. I don't feel like he's an elite player any longer. I don't know if he was ever really an elite player, but optics change when you get paid $4 million. Mm-hmm. And if Ryan Johansson can give you 70 to 80 points playing a really important, not a really important role, but a pretty high profile role, the Nazem Kadri role of 2 years ago with the Stanley Cup, like $4 million for good players that can put 70 points pretty comfortably on the board, especially among good surroundings, it's good business. It just feels like a bit of a risk because Ryan Johansson is up and down. Ryan Johansson is a bit unpredictable, and he's never been an elite player. But guess what? You don't get elite players at 50% off. So I think it's a decent gamble. You're gambling on the talent, and Ryan Johansson has had that talent. I'm just not sure that Colorado is filling that role with a guy who helped get you to a Stanley Cup in Landeskog. I think these two guys are different, and it will take something different to come out of Johansson for this to work maybe the way that they expect it to.
Yeah, a couple things on that. Just picking up on the Stanley Cup final, that actually did feel like a fever dream. We had P.K. Subban bringing in mouthwash because he was saying Sidney Crosby said his breath smelled bad. That was one of the weirdest Stanley Cup finals ever. Again, I still don't truly believe the Preds played him one. Ryan Johansson, to me, feels exactly like the guy he got traded for. Seth Jones. There was a moment in this league where we talked about that guy like a great young talent at a super
physical
important
tools
position.
Off the charts.
Physical tools off the charts has proven it. It's not like this was just tools and we never saw it. There have both been strong seasons in the NHL for both these guys. I think when you're a team like the Avalanche, who obviously is in a win now mode, they're 2 years removed from a cup. They're paying Nathan MacKinnon $1 billion. They got Cale Makar. They went out and replaced their goalie. Like they are obviously in a win now mode. These are the gambles you have to take. I think as far as gambles go, it's this year and one more. Let's say it doesn't pan out. Let's say it is an abject disaster. You are not absolutely sewering yourself by having a guy who at worst is going to be a capable 3C for you at $4 million. Now, we've seen a mistake of that nature. Alex Kerfoot, hello. It can be a problem. It's not to say it can't be one, but I think that when you're a team like the Avalanche at the spot they're at now and given the cap situation, not for them, but across the entire league, those are the gambles you have to make. And conversely, if you're the Preds, awesome move by them. Not to say that they got something great in Galchenyuk, but just clearing out the books. Them eating the $4 million for this year and next, they got 19.5 million cap space. That's not going to do anything to them. You know, maybe the ownership doesn't love cash and cutting the check, but who cares? Obviously, they were able to cross that hurdle. So I just think it is not, but I'm not sitting here and saying that's a slam dunk. What a great move. Good job. That's why the Avalanche are Stanley Cup champs. And I'm with you. I do think the pixie dust has kind of washed off on them. They tried to make it work with Galchenyuk. Gee, how'd that work out? I wonder.
But Denny Malgin, our guy.
Denny Malgin.
Actually reasonably productive.
He did have some moments there, although I feel like a classic Leaf guy.
That's like the perfect example of how, you know, the cost of winning hurt Colorado. Mm-hmm. I mean, they definitely were built to win the year they won. They were built to win years before they won. But once they got to the point where they did win and the injuries racked up and the Nazem Kadri's had to leave and you had to pay Valeri Nichushkin, it's very, very hard. And that's why we should appreciate the Tampa Bay Lightning, frankly, because they didn't suffer the same consequences as Colorado. But when you are squinting and looking at Dennis Malgin and hoping he can fill a specific role for you, it's difficult. I mean, they only really get Johansson because Landeskog is hurt, both because they have the money and because LTIR. there's an opening there, right? So they are lesser than 100%. You are lesser than with Johansson
for sure
compared to Landeskog, and they left themselves a little bit of room where they can supplement and maybe remove Malgin from the equation or someone else because they were able to get it at half price.
Yeah, and to bring it back to the Lightning there, and this is something that you're going to see when the cap jumps, is that the Lightning were in the position they were in through shrewd management, through players wanting to play their part and take a team-friendly number. But they also were in that position because their internal cap was set by an elite guy below $10 million. Mm-hmm. You look at what Stamkos took, and once that happened, you know, guys got little bumps beyond him, I believe. I don't think Stamkos is the true cap of that team, but you don't have a $12 million guy on that team.
No, he kept things suppressed.
And once, and I do not want to do revisionist history. I've said it before. I'll say it again. Signing John Tavares to that contract was a condition of employment for whoever the Leafs GM was going to be. There's no way ownership was going to say no thanks to that, okay? But once Johnny Tavares made $11 million, that set the internal cap for Matthews and Marner, and then you've seen what's happened there. The Lightning are in that position now because those guys do that. With a team like the Devils, there is no team better set up with the pillars of their team on super team-friendly deals. And so you just go back to the idea of that is the new market efficiency. And with the Avalanche, now they got their cup, so they should all be laughing. But with Nathan MacKinnon and Cale Makar making what they make, it just bumps up the values for everybody else. And then that's why you have to have your gambles for a guy like Johansson.
And they're going to be gambling until they can strike when the cap goes up.
Yep.
And then the Nathan MacKinnon deal will look really good. And the Cale Makar deal will look really good.
And Matthews'
when it goes
deal
up.
Will be up because he's going to sign for three.
And Matthews will be signing.
Matthews is going to sign a 2.5-year deal. He's going to become a UFA in December. You watch it.
Yeah, he's definitely going to find a way to maximize the earnings. And that's why an 8-year deal with someone would be great.
Can we complain about that? Or like, I feel like this has been a thing that's been bandied about and talked about, but I do feel like we just kind of gloss over it because we have to make our peace with it because everybody in hockey is telling us it's what's going to happen. Why is he truly the only one? And I don't want to kill Austin Matthews. He's a superstar.
And you are right. He is the only one.
The only one.
Connor McDavid, Nathan
McKinnon. And again, he hasn't done it yet, so let's, but he,
no,
we expect.
This is me applying the pressure.
He will be the
only
one.
Do not do it, okay? We all know Connor McDavid, oh, out of the pure goodness of his heart, went down from 13 mil to 12 and a half, maybe through cyberbullying. We can get Matthews up to a five-year deal or something like that. It is absurd. And I don't knock the player for thinking that way. I do knock him for not realizing what is happening elsewhere in the cascading.
He could still realize. He could still realize.
Please prove me wrong. Please prove me wrong. There. I said my piece. I know a lot of people are conking their horns agreeing with me.
The problem is that he's already done it, right?
Yep. Because, so why would he change?
So you've already done, it should be 8 years, the 3 years he wants to sign for right now.
Yes.
That would have been the end of the 8 years, exactly. Right? So you're missing out on the benefit. He's setting himself up because really you get two chances most of the time.
Yep.
You get the first one, the first mega deal, then you get the second mega deal. You get 2 8-year terms if you want 2 8-year terms. He is choosing to try and fit a, you know, maximize career earnings 3-year window in there. Mm-hmm. His bridge is a maximum bridge. His bridge is the bridge between two max contracts or close to max contracts. He's trying to play it where you can maximize dollars. And I get it. There has to be someone to do it first, right?
Yep.
It's got to be someone who spearheads this whole thing. But it does feel like, and I think the thing that's most annoying is that everyone who talks about it is just like, oh yeah, he'd be crazy. He'd be crazy to do 8 years. What? Why isn't anyone else crazy?
I mean, the argument there, and I don't agree with it, is, well, they were, but they were caring more about their team than money. How dare they? It drives me up the wall. And again, I would love nothing more than this rant to be thrown in my face when he, and you know what I honestly do think is going to happen? I think he's going to sign a 5-year deal and we're going to be like, wow, 5 years? What a good guy. Thank God he gave us those extra two. That is what I think is going to happen. That is going to be his Connor McDavid taking 500K less a year is a great team guy.
I actually think five is the worst thing for him because
it takes him
to 32 and then you're like, oh, we're doing 8 years with a guy who's going to be 40 at that big of a dollar? Like that's why
all
it
right,
has to
I take
be.
It back. There's no way it's happening.
I mean, it might. It would be bad for him though. he will get the chance still to sign a big contract.
That you're it's right just though. Five wants, is the worst of both worlds.
If he wants to really crush it and have it go to like age 38 when he's signing the last deal. Yep. It's got to be short.
And
it's
got to
be 3 years.
I know it's the culture of the sport as well. I would feel differently about this if you even heard from, you know, I wouldn't expect a player to come out and just say this, but if you even heard from agents of, you know, players are really thankful that Matthews is leading the charge in this. I mean, like when LeBron wanted his money in the NBA, him and Chris Paul just took over the NBA Players Association and wrote rules that allowed them to get the most money. And then guess what? Everybody else followed suit and took all the money along with them. If you had other players in the league letting it be known, filtering it out there through agents or just through insiders, whatever it is, saying, oh, I really like that he's taking all the arrows for this. I can't wait to do it. Not even naming names, just saying other players are thinking this way. Mm. We haven't even heard that. And that is the part that is, you're not even getting to be the trendsetter because is it a trend if you're the only one who does it? It's just that is the thing that continues to drive me up the wall.
Well, you know how Mitch Marner could take back just a little bit? Just a little bit of what he's lost in
good.
Terms if he just comes over
eight,
the top.
Eight times eight. No, that's
not times eight, but eight times anything.
Yeah, you're right.
Where if, again, we might reach the point by then, like people are ready to trade Mitch Marner a couple months ago. Who knows what it's going to be like next year?
Ailish was at Shania and he was there. I'm very curious about the crowd reaction if we talk to her.
Yeah, I think that's, we definitely should bring that up. I did text her about it. I'm like, how about that content play with Mitch Marner? Because I always bother her about content plays. It was the most Mitch Marner content play ever where it's just like, mostly awkward.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. Of
like,
course.
Mostly awkward.
Of course.
But I'd love to know what the crowds was like there. But yeah, again, the point is, it seems like the next person to do what Matthews is doing is going to be Mitch Marner. Right? Like, no one else. You're right. No one else is talking about it. And again, it's very situational. Like, it has to be how Matthews did it, where you don't take eight right off the bat. You take five. Because if you take eight right away, you're looking at eight because then you're looking at age 35, 36.
Exactly.
So it's so dependent on your first move. And if you've already made your first move, you're going to make your second move.
It's like chess.
And that's why Matthews would be, you're right. The people that are saying it are right. He would be crazy to do 8 years because you're not maximizing on the plan that you plotted 6 years ago.
Yeah.
When you came out of entry level.
And it's, look, if it wasn't a cap league, I would never care about this. I'd pay him $100 million a year. What do I care?
but it is a cap league, and that is the thing that separates teams. Mm-hmm. The New Jersey Devils are going to be a juggernaut moving forward because they have their 1 and 2 C locked up at a combined, I think, $15 million. The Leafs are going to pay Austin Matthews 12 to 13. Boom, right there. Mitch Marner going to get his 11.
Going to be a shade under Matthews.
Right? So
because that's where he wants to be.
Right there.
One more thing to annoy you. We're going to save, I'll save one NHL item to start the 7 o'clock hour because, again, we got Shai Davidi at 7:05. Might be the most interesting one, but to annoy people further in the Matthews vein.
Yes.
Jordan Staal signing a, and I know Jordan Staal is not Austin Matthews. He's a third line center as opposed to an elite sniper playing top line center in the biggest market in the NHL. But Staal taking a 4-year deal at under $3 million. I mean, that is, again, 4 million or 4 years might be a bit for Jordan Staal at this point in his career. Like we're talking about,
we know what's going to happen.
He might retire, but him taking that suppressed contract just because he wants to be in Carolina. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the type of thing you'd like to see from someone with this Maple Leafs team. Eventually, I'm not sure if we'll ever see that, but it seems like these concessions are only made in other markets, and that's a major one made by an impact guy for the Carolina Hurricanes,
a
really good team in the Eastern Conference.
Or guys who are 39 named Jason Spezza and Mark Giordano. That's honestly the that's only true. Time you see it. And again, it's not the only reason
because
for this.
Because it does mean something to be a Leaf.
It does. And this is not the only reason that's happening, but it goes back to what we said about Tampa. Look at the Hurricanes' internal cap. Go look at what the highest guy on that team makes. I bet Jordan Staal feels a lot more palatable being $4 million removed from that than 10.
Yeah, he could be closer. He could be closer than $2.9 million if he so chooses. I will say, though, he might not be able to do that in Carolina. And maybe that's the hard bargain that you need, where it's just like you're not bending the knee to everyone.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, we like you a lot here, Jordan. Like, you're our captain. We want you to continue to be. But you can't be here for more than $3 million.
Yep.
I'm sorry. We cannot put a 3 in front of your salary because we don't value you at more than 3.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't just overpay everyone. That's how we do it in Carolina. And that's the kind of hard bargain that really helps you as a front office. We'll talk to Frank Saravalli about everything that happened over the weekend in the NHL at 8. 2 Jays guests. But next, we will do our version of the A-List.
Sportsnet 590. Now, it's time for the A-List.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
What's up, baby?
Okay, always reluctant to do the A-List because I just don't have the metal.
Call it the B-List then.
The B-List.
I mean, it lowers expectations and I'm here.
Even lower if we really want to.
C-List for Cuthbert. And G-List for Gunning.
We don't even have... We don't even have like a sports story today, or at least I don't. I just want to ask you if this is like, is this? Mm. Oh, let's do a Tim and Sid throwback.
Oh,
Cut or Uncut?
Yes,
Cut or Uncut. Gunner, Netflix bringing Titanic back July 1. Given the number one story around the world over the last 2 weeks,
Uncut. Do you know all the terrible stuff going on in the world right now? Like, I don't want to seem crass, but I'm going to. So what? Some billionaires got stuck in a sub, okay? Read a paper. Open a book. So worse stuff happening to better people every day. If Netflix wants to bring it back to the end of our last block, a hot content play, give the people what they want. Let Jack and Rose fight over the door. I'm king of the world. I'm on top of the world. Whatever the line is at the front of the boat. Kate Winslet getting drawn with the pen. All that stuff, okay? No problem. Uncut. Give the people what they want. And they want to wallow in the misfortunes of the people. God rest their soul in that sub.
Listen, good business, I guess, is good business, right?
Is that too harsh?
July 1.
I was buying the glass for Winsig a little Canada bit. I might have gone too far.
I mean, if I would expect it, frankly, to be top 10.
I mean, it's a great movie, but it's topical, I suppose. Titanic definitely in the news, obviously, for reasons that are tragic.
I would very much like a Netflix. I don't want, I mean, they could put Titanic back. I would like a very C-level made-for-TV movie about this whole thing is what I would like.
I'm sure we're going to get that.
I told you about this. There was a Rob Ford movie that was made starring the guy from Billions, and I don't know what happened. It's never seen the light of day.
No, they won't even release it.
I need a movie of that caliber
there
made about that.
There needs to be a really, like, small, like, they need to make their mark in Toronto.
Yes.
Like, a new streaming service.
Yes.
Guess what we have?
Oh.
Guess what? We have.
We got that crack, baby.
No,
the Rob Ford movie.
I think, I would not be surprised to see, you know, top 10 Netflix.
For sure.
Titanic surfaces.
For sure.
Great movie. I had my first Sunday night where it's like, wow, there's nothing to watch here.
We're getting Winning Time back. I don't know if that happened last night or
I got to get through the first
series. I didn't finish the first season, so I don't know why I'm like so excited that the new season's
like,
here.
They have something.
There is a thing out there.
There is a thing out there. But yeah, it was like kind of a quiet sports weekend, and then it was a quiet Sunday night. I'm like, oh, we've reached summer. Give me Titanic.
I'm here for it. I'm here for it.
Okay. I'm glad we did that. I don't know if Tim or Sid would be mad that we did Cut Uncut. It was impromptu.
I have had Tim McAuliffe on my shows, and I have gone on breakfast television with Sid. So I think that makes me, at least tangentially, friend of their former show. So we're allowed to do it.
We get one. We get one for sure.
Just they could do a tenable or untenable if they want. It's yours. I'm giving it to them.
Yeah, Sid will just say untenable, and I'll just pointing at the screen, Leo style. NHL awards on Sportsnet tonight. NHL's giving out some hardware. 2023 awards taking place in Nashville. Ailish Forfar will be involved in some way, which is very exciting. I'm sure we'll see a content play out of her. The Blue Jays have the night off. They'll be back on Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590 The Fan on Tuesday with the Giants in town. Up next, we're going to talk a little Blue Jays with our guy, Shai Davidi. We'll do, we missed one NHL item too, so we'll start the 7 a.m. block with that item before we get to Shai.